behind the bench, on the floor, inside the locker room, and in the stands. We're everywhere. Never back off. With everything you need to know about the association, this is Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome to Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you from Dallas, Texas, as the Raptors get set for their final game on this five-game road trip against the Mavericks on Saturday night. But Jonesy, I don't think anybody would be expecting us to be talking about a Raptor team that is currently 8-3 overall, 3-1 on this road trip, with a chance on Saturday to potentially go 4-1, especially, of course, when we factor in the injuries to Serge Ibaka, Kyle Lowry, OG Anunoby. Even before the trip, healthy, I think both you and I were saying 2-3 would be pretty good, 3-2 would be great. Anything beyond that is absolute gravy. Well, you're already guaranteed at least 3-2, and that's in spite of having three of your top six guys down.
Well, I think you make a great point, Eric. People would have taken 3-2 with a healthy squad, and now you still have a chance to be 4-1. Now it's going to be a tall order to beat the Mavericks. They've been playing well, but don't put it past this Toronto team. And I've been saying this, and it's good that we have this forum to get it out there. I've been saying it to people around the team and broadcast crew. We've been talking about it, but to put it out in the public, for the first time in a long time, the word, that nebulous word that we can't define, culture, has a meaning in Toronto, because Toronto does have a culture. The same way, let me go across other sports. The Yankees had a culture. Mm-hmm. Bill Belichick and the Patriots have a culture. Back in the day when they were winning, the Montreal Canadiens had a culture, teams that the San Antonio Spurs, the Golden State Warriors. And what we're talking about is we have a way of doing things. I mean, the Royal We, not the Raptors, but in all of those teams that have this culture, the definition to me is a way of doing things with expectations attached to them. And Toronto has that. The fact that Lowry and Ibaka went down against New Orleans, next man up. Okay, here's what we're going to do. Here's the way we do things, and it's your turn to do it. This is what we expect. Terrence Davis, Fred VanVleet, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who probably couldn't get off the bench because maybe he didn't fully understand the culture, and Nick Nurse was making sure that he did before he actually responsibly trusted him with minutes. Rondae has been absolutely outstanding.
Been a beast.
Just been terrific. And by the way, he was joking with you and I, with me. He said, we said, hey, Junkyard Dodd. He goes, nah, man, you got to come up with a better name for me. That one's already been taken by two dudes in Toronto here. So fans, we're looking for something.
All right, I got one for you, and I'll hit him up on Twitter. And I'm not taking credit. There's a dude listening right now, hopefully, and he tweeted me, Rondae Hustle Jefferson.
Okay.
Replace the Hollis with Hustle. Okay. So maybe if we just drop Rondae and drop Jefferson and just Hustle, because that's what he's doing right now. He is working it.
Yeah, he is. And to my point, the Raptors have a culture, Eric, and that's why they are where they are right now as we record this at 8-3 and, right there with, the Celtics, who, are atop the East. Mind you, we're 10, 11, 12 games in. There's a long way to go, but you need to start running the race when the gun goes off at the start. These wins in November and late October are just as important as those wins in March and April when you're jockeying for playoff position. So I give the Raptors a lot of credit. I give Nick Nurse credit. And, it's unfathomable to me how some of our colleagues in the business in the United States can say, well, because Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green are gone, the Raptors are not a playoff team, or they're going to be finishing eighth in the East. I mean,
some had them out of the East, even in the playoffs.
Well, look, if you look at it, find me seven better teams than the Raptors right now.
Well, and I know you agree with me, Jonesy. It's not even about right now. We both said that before the season started. I mean, I'll keep beating that drum, and I'm sure many people listening right now are in agreement with us as well. I was not down on this team like so many other before the season even started. I said point blank, that this should still be a top four team. I'd be disappointed if they didn't have home court advantage in the playoffs. And then you get me into the playoffs, get me home court advantage, hopefully get me into the second round, all bets are off. All I got to do is win four more games, I'm in the conference finals. Well, and that, to me, is at least the bar that should be set for this team. You know, you want to talk about repeating, that'd be great. You want to talk about at least getting back to the finals, that'd be great. But if you can at least get yourself through the conference finals again, there's no reason to think at the beginning of the season that you can't compete with Boston, with Philadelphia, you know, with whomever you want to slide in there as the other team, whether it be obviously Milwaukee, and people were thinking that Detroit was going to come on, is Indiana going to be there, et cetera. You know, Milwaukee, I still thought, was the cream of the crop. Boston early on is proving otherwise, but Toronto is, or was, at least in my eyes, right there, and they're proving me and you and many others right, as opposed to just proving some people in the South wrong.
Well, yeah, and as we said, let's put the qualifier down. It is early, but people asked me all the way through, well, what do you think about the team this year? I said they could finish anywhere from 1 to 5, you know, and I'm with you. I think home court is definitely something that is, you know, a possibility and should be a goal. And as you said, like, you don't know how the injuries shake down. I mean, I wonder how Boston would be doing right now. Hayward's out. But if they had Kemba Walker and Jason Tatum out, mm-hmm. or Philadelphia, if they had Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, yep. and Al Horford out, again, it's still early. But the Raptors have, and people have said, well, they haven't played anybody. Well, you know, they just went through L.A. where they split games, and they could have come out with two wins. They didn't, but they could have. They go to Portland, who was in the conference finals last year, albeit struggling. Still missing Jusuf Nurkić, but Toronto comes away with a win there. Let's see what happens Saturday night in Dallas. I mean, you're going to go home and you're going to have a couple of teams that you never count wins on paper, but you look at Charlotte coming in and Orlando, who you've already beaten once. And, you know, you should be looking at, you know, a 10-4 start kind of thing. Yeah. And now you're approaching the quarter pole of the season. So, if you're a Raptor fan, you have to be pleased with what's going on right now. And I will say this: Kawhi Leonard last year made them a team that was built for the playoffs. And it remains to be seen once they get to the playoffs, because I feel they are going to be in the playoffs, who emerges or how far can the committee take them by playoffs. But Doc Rivers said it in his pregame news conference on Monday night at Staples Center. He knows. He's been there. He says, I look at the Raptors. They have the championship rub. They know what it's like to get there. You're not going to break them. They understand what mm-hmm. it takes. And I give this example all the time of building a shed in my backyard, and I couldn't get the last little bit done, and went next door to my neighbor who's a foreman on a construction site, and he came over and he goes, not bad. You know, I followed the instructions, you know, assiduously, and he picks up the shed and he drops it and he bangs the side, and all of a sudden the corner squares up, and I look at him and I say, oh, that's how you do it. He goes, yeah, I've done this before. And the Raptors are the same way now. They got the final piece. Lowry, Ibaka, Van Vliet, and Anobi, Powell, they all understand what it is. Even guys that didn't play that were there, Boucher, they understand what it is mm-hmm. to win a championship, and they've seen it done, and they know, they understand how to do it, and that is experience that goes a long way.
You know, you brought up his name earlier, and the name you didn't mention right there, maybe because you mentioned him earlier, Nick Nurse.
Yes.
I'm listening to Terry Stotts on Wednesday night after the game in Portland, and one of the first things he talks about is how the Raptors showing the box-in-one defense in the first half and how it really threw his team for a loop. And then after the game, we hear Damian Lillard talking about the box-in-one, and it's like this box-in-one thing that sort of popped up last year in the playoffs with the Raptors against Steph Curry. Whether it's box-in-one, whether it's full court, whether it's, you know, showing 2-3 bodies, whatever it is, the Raptors, going back to where you started maybe, Jonesy, 7-8 minutes ago about the culture really seems to be defined by the hustle, the hard work, the defense, and as a result, the offense is showing it's fine. Even without Serge Ibaka, even without Kyle Lowry, even without OG Anunoby, they're still scoring and finding ways to score, but it's the defense, the tenacity with that defense that is ultimately being, to me at least, proving to be the biggest X factor to this point.
I'll go back to my brother Mark's Hall of Fame broadcast partner, who was one of the great coaches in NBA history, Hubie Brown. And I can hear Hubie saying, come on, you can always score the ball. Come on. And that means it defaults to the defensive end. Yeah. What are you going to do at the defensive end? And to the culture that we spoke about, the Raptors have developed that culture on the defensive end. And you know, here's Nick Nurse playing the box and one. And Nick himself with the, you know, people looking at you, well, you can't do that. Well, why not? Well, you can't play box and one in the NBA final. You can't play a, you know, as Steph Curry called it, a janky college defense. Well, you know what? They just did.
And it worked.
And it worked. Yeah. Right? So don't look at him and say you can't. And Nick, you know, he values head coaching experience because he's had it. And he's a we'll figure it out kind of guy. And I give him a lot of credit for that. I give him a lot of credit for, all right, we got guys down. What are we going to do? Let's figure this out. And his whole staff is of that mindset when you think about Adrian Griffin and Sergio Scariolo and you know, all of them, every single guy on that bench, Nate Bjorkgren, John Goodwillie, they all, you know what, Patrick Mutombo, we'll figure it out and we'll get this done.
All right, one of the new faces, one of the new guys we haven't necessarily mentioned, and that wasn't obviously intentional because they've been getting a lot of lift from some of the new faces. We talked about Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. How about Terrence Davis? And how about the sharpshooter Matt Thomas coming in as well during this road trip? We have not played this interview for you yet on any of our pregame shows or otherwise. This is the first time you are hearing it. I had a chance to go one-on-one with Raptor rookie Matt Thomas. Matt, take me back to the offseason. We're a couple weeks into the year now, but how did this all come together, you know, sort of post-college, overseas, and now finally getting here to the NBA? How did it all kind of come to fruition?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a fun journey. You know, it was funny, you know, out of college, the Raptors were a team that, you know, showed interest in me. I did a pre-draft workout up in Toronto back in 2017. Was actually like supposed to play with the Raptors in summer league, was all set to do that, and then made a last second change to play with the Lakers. But you know, then, you know, had the opportunity to, you know, go to training camp and maybe go to the G League route coming out of college, but, you know, had an opportunity to go to Spain as a rookie and play in the ACB, and that was an opportunity that I really felt like I couldn't pass up. I felt like, you know, for my game, my skill set, it was better to go to Europe and specifically play in Spain. You know, it's a really good league over there to develop and, you know, hope to make this jump, you know, in like, you know, 2 to 3 years was kind of a window that I had talked to with my agent that felt realistic for me. And then sure enough, you know, in those first 2 years in Spain, you know, the Raptors were always a team, you know, my agent said was, you know, kind of had their eye on me. And, you know, after that second year in Valencia, they felt like it was the right time. To try to, you know, help me make this jump, and, you know, with their roster and everything, it worked out for it to make it happen this summer.
How tough was it to ultimately make that decision to go the European route as opposed to the G League? Because I got to imagine for a lot of guys, it's like, you know, the dream of being in the NBA and staying in North America, but then to recognize that, hey, this is still a hell of a league that I'm going to.
Yeah. No, for me, it was an easy decision, to be honest.
Okay.
I felt like, you know, just for my game and my skill set, it would be better to play in Europe. You know, I didn't know a ton about the league, but everything I had heard, you know, pointed me in that direction. As well as just to, I mean, as a kid growing up, small town Wisconsin, I never thought I would have the opportunity to even go to Europe, you know, let alone like live in Spain. And
had you been to Europe before you went?
It's funny, actually, you know, when I was in college at Iowa State, we did our foreign tour in Spain. So I was in Madrid, Barcelona, and Valencia. So I had some background in Spain, a little bit of a comfortability, I guess you could say. But like I was saying, you know, from a kid from Onalaska, Wisconsin, you know, city of 20,000 people, I never thought I'd be able to go to Europe, let alone live there. So I was able to kind of, you know, knock out two birds with one stone by, you know, playing professional basketball, which has always been a dream of mine, but also just, you know, living in Europe and experiencing that that culture and that life experience.
Just looking big picture here, more just your opinion on things. Do you see it changing for guys in general? Like, you know, I guess we kind of go back and forth with young kids. Like, there's some guys that are foregoing college to go to Europe, coming straight from high school to go to Europe. Other guys that are now saying, well, the G League, it's growing and getting bigger than it is, and maybe the money's a little bit better, so I'll actually stay in North America. I mean, it's like, or is it just kind of comes down to each individual?
I think it all just comes down to the individual. Yeah. Like you're saying, there's a lot of the top high school prospects going to, you know, Australia to play or Europe to play. electing to do that versus college. That could easily change, you know, if they allow kids to go straight to the NBA from high school, that you could see that change. And then when it comes to the G League, I think, versus Europe, I think it all just depends on the individual and their values and what they're looking for.
So when the Raptors finally called and this finally came together for you in this offseason, tell me about just the excitement level and the family and friends that are you know, finally getting you back home, in a sense, back on a North American ground at least, but finally thrilled to see you at the NBA level.
Yeah, I mean, it's been great. It's, like I said, it's been a fun journey, fun ride. You know, everyone's path is different. You know, this has always been a dream of mine since I was a kid, and I've worked for this opportunity, you know, essentially my entire life. So it's really special to, you know, have it come to fruition for me. And then not just for me, but everyone that's been involved, you know, all my friends, family, all my coaches that have been there, you know, all through all the highs and lows. And now they're able to kind of experience this with me. And I was just recently, you know, we've had games in Chicago and Milwaukee, both, you know, 3-4 hour driving distance from my hometown. So I've had a lot of people there supporting me. And like I said, it's just been special to be able to experience it with them now.
What are the Raptors telling you through camp, through the early parts of this season, that they want from you specifically? Obviously, you're a shooter, but it can't just be just one-dimensional. What else do they want from you?
Just doing all the little things, man. You know, this team is obviously really good. Coming off a championship, has a lot of good players. I'm just trying to find my niche, you know, and that's going to be knocking down open shots, keeping it simple on offense, and then being able to defend, being able to defend my position, just being in the right spots, and doing all the little things.
Have you had any of those moments yet? As a you know, you're a rookie, but you're not. I mean, you're a rookie in the NBA, but you're not a rookie mm-hmm. professional. Have you had any of those moments that are kind of eye-opening compared to the things you have or haven't experienced, or is it just kind of, you know, almost old hat, just in a different league?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, no. You know, it's everything that I expected, to be honest. You know, in the NBA, I think the biggest difference outside of the game, you know, you have all the talented players and, you know, the level of athletes a little bit different. But, you know, in the NBA, it's just it's a lot more of an entertainment. You know, you can't, at the end of the day, you know, this is an entertainment business, and, you know, all this, the lights and everything, you know, cameras, just stuff like this, all the media is a little bit more than what you'd see in Europe. But, you know, once you get inside the lines, you know, the game, basketball, it's all the same.
Is this stuff you like doing, though? I mean, I know you got an Instagram account. I don't even know if you're on Twitter and stuff, but do you like interacting with the media, you know, and kind of being on social media and all that stuff? Or?
I do. I mean, it's everyone, you know, everyone likes it to a different extent.
Yeah.
For me, I like it because, you know, basketball's allowed me to have a platform to hopefully, you know, inspire and impact others. That's how I try to use, you know, my social media account and, you know, stuff like this and interviews and whatnot, just to share my story and hopefully make an impact and inspire, you know, some kids.
All right, to that point, I'll end it on this. You said earlier, you know, coming from a town of 20,000 people, you didn't think you'd ever have a chance to be in Europe. Did you think you had a chance to be in the NBA? I always marvel at the fact. I think people forget sometimes there's only 450 of these jobs.
Yeah.
There's 15 roster spots, a little more now, I guess, but 30 teams. You know, you're one of a very, very small percentage in, you know, the entire globe. Like, did you dreamt about it, but did you think it would be a reality?
When you're watching NBA and stuff as a kid, you know, you kind of dream about it. You never know if it's actually realistic, you know. So it's hard to answer the question. You know, I always just worked hard. I loved basketball. I played, and I tried to become the best player I could. And, you know, wherever the chips fall, where we're going to fall, they were going to fall, you know. As I got older, and as I was playing in Europe and playing it towards college, you know, I thought that it was, you know, there was a chance. It was more, you know, it was realistic. But at the same time, you never know what's going to happen. You can't bank on anything. I knew I wasn't, you know, going to get drafted coming out of college. It was going to be a different route for me. But I just continue to work, and I'm continuing to do that every day to try to see, you know, where this thing can take me.
Were you a Bucks fan as a kid?
I wasn't, actually. I was a Lakers fan. Grew up a Lakers fan. I when I started watching the NBA, it was kind of when they went that three-peat in 2000, 2001, and 2002, so I kind of hopped on the bandwagon, but I was a big Kobe fan growing up.
So there's no grief back home from young kids or family members of, you know, you guys with the little rivalry you might have with Giannis and the Bucks right now? There's nothing?
No, not really. I mean, I actually had some family and friends, you know, obviously in Milwaukee, and a few of them are, you know, some of my friends that live in Milwaukee are Bucks fans. You know, they were cheering for me, obviously, that night, though. But no, nothing real.
That was Raptor rookie Matt Thomas. When we continue, another Matt. It's Matt Devlin, our colleague on the TV side. We'll chat with him about being Broadcaster of the Year in Canada. Up next on Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
This is Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Jonesy, we're going to jump right into it. We'll hear from you again in our third segment of the show as you'll go one-on-one with NBA writer Brad Turner. But first, I had a chance to go one-on-one with our colleague on the TV side, Raptors TV voice Matt Devlin, who earlier today was named the Canadian Sports Media Broadcaster of the Year. Matt, first of all, congratulations. Sports Media Canada Broadcaster of the Year. You got the award earlier this evening. What a whirlwind this past year was, certainly. And I want to go back and get into the history, Matt Devlin. We've done this before, especially when you first came to town, but it's been basically a decade. But before we get to all that, you and I in Canada were the only two to have the opportunity to call the championship. And hey, it means more on television, you know, in terms of the platform.
Not true,
no, it
not
does.
True.
It does. The platform that you have to the millions that were watching, literally. Take me back to that moment and what was going through your mind leading up to the game, how you were preparing for what you might be able to call versus how much you just lived in the moment and let that moment live.
Well, first of all, thank you. And it's, you know, it is a great honor. And so many before who have won it, to be mentioned with them certainly, you know, is humbling. And you know, I think all along this ride, you know, you think about all these different games that we broadcast and special moments that ultimately the players provided us to call. And that started with Orlando losing game one and the response of winning four in a row and getting into the Philadelphia series. And, you know, you get to call the shot, you know, which is, you know, an unbelievable moment, one of the greatest moments as far as myself professionally. And then ultimately, you know, 24 seasons in the making, the Raptors are headed to their first NBA Finals. And then you get into the NBA Finals and heading into Game 6. After Game 5, I'll be honest, I really never thought about the next game while I was doing each game.
Yeah.
I was really living in the moment. And you know me where I, from a preparation standpoint, I put in a lot of work and then the game dictates where you go. And I've never written anything down as far as to close a show. And I have jotted down some notes in the open of a show just to kind of guide where, you know, I wanted to put a setting prior to tip. But never have I ever written something down before something happened, because the game, it's the brilliance of, you know, sports. You don't know where it's going to go.
Yeah.
But after game five, you knew there's only two games left and you just needed to win one.
Yeah.
For the Raptors to ultimately have the NBA title. So that was really the first time that I thought, you know, I need to have something to say. And what is it that I'm going to say? And then different from radio, knowing that you have to allow the pictures to tell some of that story.
Sure.
As well. You know, pictures, you know, as we know, you know, can tell a lot. And so it was flying out there on the Tuesday after the Monday Game 5 loss, and I started really thinking about it. And Wednesday, and then ultimately Thursday, I think, is when I really kind of narrowed it down. And you had a great call, you know, with yours. And, you know, for me, I wanted it to be very succinct. And then I wanted to make the point, right? You want to try to bring everybody in on what was this unbelievable ride. And so that's why I went with Canada, the NBA title is yours. And then once you say that, you know, what did they win, right? The Toronto Raptors,
yep,
are the, and
yep,
then you just go back to your broadcasting,
yep,
right? Of, you know, the Toronto Raptors are the 2019 NBA champions. And then as everything was unfolding, you know, from there, I think I said something along the lines of it happened, it's real.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And then, you know, Chris Phillips, who was a director, was just cutting a lot of different things. You know, you let it breathe, as they say. And then as he was cutting and showing different players, you know, I went down the line of each kind of individual story. But I also, in game six, so I did write that down, Canada, the NBA title is yours. And because each game two, as you know, every outcome was so different and games went down to the wire, essentially. And I didn't want to say it too early.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
You know, and as we know, 0.9 on the clock, a lot happened, oh. Right? And so I waited until the buzzer mm-hmm. sounded before I said it. And I
struggled. Now, it's funny that you say that you have. I've never written. You've been doing it longer than I have, but I've never written anything down. When I get journalism students and stuff asking me questions about one piece of advice, I've never written a question down in my life. Going back to doing a radio show and sidelines and doing interviews for 20 years, I've never written a question down. But what I struggled with, same thing. I never thought about it until game six, thinking, all right, it's either going to happen, game six or game seven.
Yeah.
And I was trying to find a way to come up with the wording of a call without saying, for the first time ever, the flag will fly north of the border, which is the baseball call going back to 92 in the World Series broadcast, because this was the first time ever the World Series, first time ever the NBA championship is going to be north of the border. And tying in the We the North, you know, planting that flag north of the border for the first time, that's a perfect call. It would have tied in everything to basketball, but you couldn't repeat that one because it's already been used in baseball. And that's where I know I struggle. I'm like, I better have something ready just in case.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to be stuttering and stammering in that moment.
No, you're exactly right. And again, to your point, I mean, I've always been a big believer in do all your work. The game will dictate where you go. But this moment was unlike any other moment. I mean, I've broadcast Olympics, as have you. I've broadcast football and basketball and NBA games and Major League Baseball games, NFL games. I've broadcast a lot, but I've never have broadcasted a NBA Finals game until this year.
Yeah.
And so it's different. And I never allowed myself to think like, oh, okay, I better have something. It really was. It's funny. You have a couple of days to really think about it, as you well know, and you're walking around San Francisco. And, you know, you're feeling a little pressure, like, I better come up with something.
Yeah.
I better come up with something pretty good here, you know. And I just kept on saying to myself, that, you know, just be, you know, succinct. Okay, so you want to be, you know, on television. You want it to be short. And you want to get it to the point. But then how do I bring everybody in, right?
Yep.
And so that's why I went with... ultimately why I settled on, you know, Canada, the NBA title is yours. And quite honestly, I don't know if I was how many other different things. I kept on thinking I got to tie in Canada, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I felt like, you know, the whole country embraced the Raptors. So it's yours, you know, so and the fan base and just the whole thing. So that's where it went.
I want to ask you this because you bring the unique perspective. I mean, you're Canadian now as well.
Yeah.
So I can say, as an American, but as a Canadian, as a guy who's
dual citizen,
who's worked on this side of the border now for, what, a decade plus?
12 years is my 12th season.
It's crazy to think it's been that long. Do you think that we do, and this there's going to be people listening right now that say, like, Eric sounds so self-righteous or something. Do we do enough in our country, in Canada, to celebrate and to I don't know if honor is the right word, profile and honor the writers, broadcasters, those in the media? Because the one thing I notice in the States, and hey, some people might just say, hey, it's a job, you call the games, and that's fair.
Yeah.
I see all the time the Atlanta Sports Hall of Fame, the Georgia Sports Hall of Fame, the Southeast Region Sports Hall of Fame, awards ceremonies. I mean, there is awards after awards, and maybe it's too many. Maybe it, to then that point, it speaks to how much of an honor it is for you to have won this award, because it is so prestigious, because there are so few in Canada.
Right. It's an interesting perspective, and you and I have talked about this before. So much of it is population-based, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you have a New York State Sports Broadcaster of the Year. You have a Tennessee Sports Broadcaster of the Year, a Georgia, California. All the states have one, right? I don't know. I don't think Ontario has that, or British Columbia, or the Northwest Territories, or, you know, right? So... It's interesting. Look, it's a phenomenal honor, and there are great broadcasters, as you know, in Canada. And I go back to when I first got the job in 2008, and my first producer was Paul Graham.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I made a point to sit with him and talk to him about the history of broadcasting in Canada, because I love broadcasting, I love TV, I love radio, and you know, you combine that with sports, it's just really, to me, been an unbelievable, you know, profession. And so, yeah, I have an immense amount of respect for all the great announcers that we sat there and talked about, you know, for the year that he was my producer, and you know, provided me a great perspective of, you know, what the Raptors mean, and then, you know, what, you know, whether it be Foster Hewitt or Danny Gallivan, and just so many other, Chris Cuthbert and Dave Hodge, and the list goes on, right? And so that was just really good perspective for me, and I, you know, really wanted to lean on him to learn all of that.
I like personally, not only because I know you and you're a friend, but I like the fact that it's obviously showing the popularity of basketball as well. And all those names that you just mentioned, this, you know, this traditionally, historically, has been hockey. And the fact that because the Raptors put themselves in the spotlight, they put the spotlight on all of us that much more. And then the viewers turned out in droves, which then puts you in a position to have that forum, that mass of people listening to you, watching you, and to put yourself in a position to be recognized for this award. And that just speaks to, again, the growth of the sport and what that could mean for the future of this team and for the fan base across the country.
Well, absolutely. And there's room not only for basketball, hockey, soccer, all sports.
Absolutely.
And baseball, obviously. And so, you know, to me, it was just really fun along this journey of the 2 months of the postseason to see people get interested in it. Because a lot of people, as you know and I know, grew up without the game.
Yep.
You know, that are our colleagues or contemporaries. And so, you know, for them to see all of that, to me, is really, really special. And then, as you also know, look, with your son Jackson or my three boys, they're growing up with this. And so we know what the impact is going to be in the next 10 years. We know the impact over the course of the next 20 years. You think about the Vince Carter effect. Well, there's going to be a 2019 World Championship Toronto Raptor effect. And there's more kids playing basketball now than ever before. There's more players from Canada in the NBA than ever before. And there's going to be a day where there's going to be multiple Canadians on each NBA team. And that's just a great day. And you think about Nick Nurse now being involved with Canada basketball. To me, it just is all headed in the right direction. And it's great to be a part of it. I've been here, this is my 12th season, and I've seen the growth. And and as you know, I have, you know, sons that have played multiple sports, and two of them play hockey at a higher level. And, you know, I used to always say, I know how relevant the Raptors are by going in those rinks, and those kids are the ones talking about it. Well, now their parents are talking about it as well, so it's just great to see.
All right, I'm going to leave it at this. I want to make sure I give you an opportunity to say this, because I don't want you yelling at me later for not reminding you. You gave me a little love off top. I appreciate that. You didn't have to, but you work alongside two guys as well that I know presented you with the award earlier in the evening as well, and you've had a chance to work alongside them and grow with them as well. And I mean, we've all kind of, whether it's Jonesy and myself and Sherm Hamilton, and there's only like five or six of us that are kind of jumping between radio stations and TV stations and kind of traveling together, for some of us for 20 plus years, others for 10 plus years, whatever. But I know you've probably want to give a word or two on Jack and Leo, I would imagine.
Well, look, at
even on the fan, we'll give Jack Armstrong some love.
Sure, why not? You know, look, and you know this, because we're out on the road. They're great friends. And so to be able to lean on them from a professional standpoint is always great. But we have recently, Jack, Leo, and I were together along with a couple of other guys in Toronto at a restaurant. And a table came over to us that was sitting close to us and said, you know, sorry to interrupt, as they were leaving, and said, you know, it's just great to see that you guys actually do like each other. Like, it's not some made-up thing on the radio, on TV, on, you know, that you guys actually have fun with each other, and we do, and we're good friends. I've known Jack, as you well know, going back to the late 90s, and our ties go even back further than that. My wife, Erin, her older brother, and Jack have worked basketball camps together since they were, you know, in their early 20s, right? Late teens, early 20s. So, and Leo and I have known each other for, you know, close to 20 years because of my time in the NBA and his time in the NBA. So it's really special to have them both. And they made an exception to have both of them there, which was really cool. And you also know this. Look, television is a big show. And so it's not about the people that are in front of the camera. It's just as important, the people behind the scenes. And when you think about the guys that we had in the truck on a nightly basis in the postseason, it just, you know, they're able to capture all those moments, and then they allow me to speak about it. And that, to me, you know, I'm very grateful to have such a great crew.
That was the TV voice of the Toronto Raptors, Matt Devlin. When we come back on Hoops from Dallas, we'll put Jonesy to work again as he'll go one-on-one with Brad Turner, national NBA writer, talking Lakers, Clippers, and a lot of stuff around the association right here on Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This is Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to Hoops on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Thanks again to Matt Thomas, Matt Devlin, but now, well, not a Matt. It's a Brad. Brad Turner from the LA Times. Jones, you had a chance to speak with him in Los Angeles, and there's only a few NBA stories going on coming out of LA.
Yeah, there's only a few, and we were talking mostly about the Lakers. We didn't hit the Clippers, but spent the time talking about the Lakers and kind of talking about the Raptors and what he saw as a veteran writer going forward with the Raptors this season.
All right, Jonesy with Brad Turner.
Brad, let's talk about this Laker team as it is so constructed this year. Obviously, it looks like that drought of missing the playoffs is going to end. And we know that people measure things with banners and rings here in L.A. You know, it's early, but they sure look like they could be in the mix.
You know what it is, mostly? They're playing great defense. In fact, the best defense in the NBA ratings-wise.
Third best field goal percentage defense, yeah.
And you have this guy named LeBron James, who's pretty good.
Yeah.
You got this guy named Anthony Davis, who's pretty good. So having the two of the top five best players in the league helps you have a really good team. They lost the first game to the Clippers, but they've since won seven straight. Playing great defense, sharing the basketball, and with LeBron James getting triple-doubles along the way.
What I'm impressed with is, you know, we always say that you can't do it alone. And they've got two stars, but, man, some of the other guys. I look at a Danny Green coming over from Toronto. I look at a guy like – I watch him in summer league. Alex Caruso is playing his backside off. I mean, there are so many of these other guys that are willing to play their roles and contribute.
The biggest surprise has been Dwight Howard.
Right.
I had my doubts about Dwight Howard being an effective player, being someone who just could accept his role, based on what I saw over the last few years, he's healthy now, and he really has become someone who knows he's not the same Dwight from 2010,
right,
when he was one of the top players in the NBA. Having him play basketball the way he's playing, physical basketball, rebounding, blocking shots, loading to the basket, setting really good screens, has been the biggest surprise I think anyone could have expected out of the Lakers.
Brad, maybe I'm too close to the trees to see the whole forest, but are people overlooking the Raptors? I mean, I know they're injured now, they're a little beat up, but they still have 7-8 guys, the remnants of the championship team that learned how to win, and those guys, they feel like they have it in them. Some people in our business not even picking them to be in the playoffs. Am I missing something here?
No, when you say it like that, they are overlooking the Raptors. I think when the season began, no one thought that they would really be a playoff contending team, perhaps on the fringes. But you have a great coach. You have a great system. Obviously, you lost one of the best players in the NBA, Kawhi Leonard. But that's a really good team they have. Kyle Lowry, he's not playing tonight. Great player. You have the young guy, Pascal. My God, are you kidding me? He has come a such a long, long way, and to see him rise to the occasion this season makes me think that he can be a special player in the league and so forth. Because of that,
right,
the Raptors are a team that you have to be afraid of.
Handicap the East for me, B.
Wow, man.
Give me your top four or five.
My top four or five. It's still Boston,
yeah,
although they had a bad injury
right
the other day.
You got to go Philadelphia.
I like Philadelphia, Milwaukee. Yeah. But you lost, since you lost two of your guys, I wonder how long Ibaka would be out, how long Kyle would be out. So they would have been my fourth team based on the way they have been playing. After that, it sort of drops to me.
Right.
It could be anyone out of the East, because there's no one that's really stirred the pot a whole lot in the East except for those four teams. So beyond those four teams, that's all I can give you.
Brad, let's look at the West. Everybody thinks that it's going to be L.A. and L.A. You could cover a series this year where you don't have to travel at all.
That'd be great.
And a lot of people look at it as potentially the conference final, but who else do you think might have a say when this is all said and done?
The Denver Nuggets. They're the one team, I think, that has enough star power, and that's Nikola Jokic. They have enough role players, and they are deep. And they're physical, and they play really good offense and really good defense. They have a really good coach in Mike Malone, and they have gone through the war they went through last year, losing a game 7 to Portland at home. Those things help you along the way. I was liking the Portland Trail Blazers, but they're missing too many pieces right now, and it could hurt them along the way. I'm not sold on Houston just yet because they don't play any defense.
Right.
They can't guard my old behind. They don't even try to play defense. And their coach is a lame-duck coach on the last year of a deal that also plays a small factor in guys buying in. And so the teams I still like here are the Denver Nuggets. I like the Lakers and the Clippers. I was sort of feeling Portland for a while. Let's not forget the Utah Jazz.
Yes, yes.
Another good young team that can do some damage, especially when they play their home games.
Brad, I want to kind of take a look around the league. One of the biggest things that people have talked about is this coach's challenge. I have my own maybe conspiracy theories on the coach's challenge, but I want your thoughts on the challenge, what you think of it, and where you think it might be headed. It's only a one-year trial right now.
I'm going to guess this is the last year of it. I don't think coaches like it a lot. I know Doc Rivers challenged a game recently, and they lost that challenge. So he was opposed to it because they lost the challenge.
Right.
The very first time I saw it used was in Hawaii during training camp. The Clippers were playing the Houston Rockets. And Mike D'Antoni uses the challenge because he wanted to see how it would work and to see if he could prevent one of his key guys, which I think was James Harden,
from getting an early foul. Yeah.
So they're thinking about ways how it can be beneficial. I'm going to say by next season, it won't be around anymore because coaches still aren't quite sure how it works. And when it doesn't work in their favor, then in their eyes, it's no good.
Right. Well, my thinking is, I think the things that you're probably going to be allowed to challenge next year would be maybe goaltends and maybe out of bounds. I just think, I mean, as Doc said with the fouls, nobody wants to be wrong. So you go over there and you look at it and you say, I'm wrong. I don't know how many fouls have been overturned this year. I know there are stats out there, but my feeling is it takes a lot for a referee to make a call, then go over and look at the monitor and say I was wrong in front of the whole arena.
They're humans, too. They don't want to be wrong. Yeah. And most of the time, they are actually right when they make these calls.
It is the toughest game to officiate.
Oh, absolutely. We've got these big, fast athletes coming up and down the court. They're physical. They're pushing and shoving. What is a foul, what's not a foul. Does the star get more treatment than a regular role player? Of course he does. But that's life. I mean, look at you. You wear better suits than I wear.
Well, nobody can see that right now, right?
But they know it now.
We're both doing the radio thing.
That was national NBA writer from the LA Times, Brad Turner. A lot there on the Lakers, as you mentioned, going into it, and certainly touching on the Toronto Raptors as well. We should give maybe a quick 30, 45 seconds on the Clippers. What's standing out to me a little bit, putting aside tonight's game for the Clips, Jonesy, this team, you know, kind of referencing what I said earlier about the Raptors, Toronto's finding ways to score while still being very good defensively. The Clippers are solid defensively. They just don't seem to be scoring a whole lot right now, which I find a little bit surprising considering some of their personnel.
Yeah, and look, it'll get better with Paul George coming back. But, you know, Doc is one of those guys. He'll figure it out on the offensive end. They want to hang their hat on the defense. And I think that's a little bit of the adjustment there with guys learning to play with Kawhi. You know, it makes you look even more so at Toronto the way the Raptors really had their two styles last year, one with Kawhi in the game handling the ball and making the decisions, and then what they're using now and what they used in the 22 games that he wasn't there last year with the ball popping and moving and an equal opportunity offense.
That's going to do it for our latest edition of Hoops from Dallas, Texas. Thanks again to Matt Thomas, Matt Devlin, and Brad Turner for Paul Jones and our entire production crew. I'm Eric Smith. Again, it's been Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.